passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, our one podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Man, on Tuesday, we are appreciative of your time. We'll be here for 4 hours or maybe not much longer if you decide to shut us off immediately. But you shouldn't do that because we have a lot of great guests this afternoon. We'll go around the SEC. We'll take your phone calls, share with you the latest news. And we began with Wilson Alexander, the great young reporter for The Advocate, talking about LSU as the Tigers head to Oxford. Wilson, thank you. Appreciate it. We talked to Brian Kelly yesterday. He seemed fairly upbeat as the Tigers survived Arkansas. What do you think is the state of this program as we say hello to you?
Well, thanks for having me, Paul. Good to see you as always. You know, this is a program that is trying to figure out things on the defensive side of the ball right now. Offensively, they are playing at a very high level. Jaden Daniels has been one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC. And when they're executing, they have an extremely high ceiling. But on the defensive side, there's still some concerns that they have to address. Kelly was pretty positive yesterday, saying that they can still be a really good defense. You have seen individual moments that are encouraging, but they haven't yet maybe put together, outside of the Mississippi State game, a full, complete defensive game. When they're able to get pressure on a quarterback and sort of alleviate some of the pressure on the secondary of their own, then they're able to have some success. But they have been a little bit inconsistent, and they need to get that sorted out as they head into a couple of difficult road games.
Now, if you're at a distance like we are, you think about some of the great players on this defensive side with Harold Perkins and so many others, and you go, how can they not be good? They have been good at times, but expound on that a little bit, because I think this is going to be a major issue, especially this weekend against what, other than the Alabama game, has been a high-flying offense.
They do have good players. Harold Perkins, as we know, is extremely talented, especially when he's able to get after the passer. Mason Smith, earlier in his career, but not necessarily yet, now coming off of an ACL injury and some ankle problems in preseason camp, has been a talented player. Mekhi Wingo, one of their talented defensive linemen who they can line up all over the front, is playing at an all-SEC level and maybe even an all-American kind of level. Jordan Jefferson, another defensive lineman who came in from West Virginia, has been disruptive. They've gotten good play out of the linebackers, especially in recent weeks with Greg Tent and Whit Weeks, who's a true freshman who's really come along. But they still got some questions in the secondary, especially right now, now that they don't have Greg Brooks because of the situation that he's dealing with, having had surgery for a brain tumor, of course. You know, this is a defense that feels really good about its front seven, and that group feels like it's pretty close to maybe being able to put some things together. We'll see if they can. But yeah, now they have to face an Ole Miss offense that, while Alabama shut them down last week, they're still scoring 42 points a game. That's second best in the SEC. They like to run the football, and LSU's had some trouble with its run fits at times this year. Kelly thinks that they're close. He pointed to a sequence in the Arkansas game in the second half when Arkansas had just picked up a fake field goal attempt to give itself a fresh head of downs in the red zone. LSU was able to, do three plays later, force an actual field goal attempt because of two sacks and a tackle for a 2 yard gain. And he thinks that, you know, that moment right there showed what this defense can be when it's playing assignment correct and everybody's doing their job at the same time. So when they've gotten in some trouble is when some guys try to go and maybe be a hero in certain moments or get away from their assignment, which is what we saw on Arkansas's two touchdown drives in the second half.
Wilson, I want to pick up on what you said about Greg Brooks. Yesterday, Kelly did not have much new to offer, I realize you're a reporter. It's hard to get information, but what's it been like covering a truly awful story?
Yeah, it's just heartbreaking for Greg Brooks and for his family as they try to deal with this. They've been at the hospital, really for over 10 days now. He is sounds like he's making progress based on what Brian Kelly has said. At least able to get up and move around. Kelly, of course, told you yesterday, that was sort of news to us around here, that they still had not gotten the pathology reports back yet. So as of yesterday, clearly they were still waiting on that to know the full scope of what they're going to be dealing with here. This has definitely hit the team hard. I mean, Greg is a team captain. He's somebody who draws an immense amount of respect in that locker room. He's also a very talented player. They felt it both from just a pure on-field perspective, and just not having somebody who they really love around them in the locker room. And so everybody around here is, I think, you know, keeping Greg in their thoughts and trying to sort of exude as much positive energy toward him as possible. That's kind of the extent of what we know about the situation right now. His family is trying to remain private, which I think everybody respects in this situation, of course. But it's just, it's been tough around here for people to kind of just, you know, deal with this and see what's going on with someone who still does, can have so much ahead of him.
Chatting with Wilson Alexander from The Advocate, talking about the LSU Tigers. And Wilson, I'm just kind of reassociating here a little bit about LSU, because I remember last year there were a couple of, you know, difficult games on the road. The obviously the Arkansas game was a narrow miss. The A&M game went haywire. This year, being on the road, even though it was supposedly neutral site, was a disaster against Florida State. Although the outlier was Mississippi State. I bring all that up because Ole Miss is Saturday night. It's the premier game in the league this weekend. And talk about what's at stake, really, for this LSU team.
What's at stake is whether or not they're going to be an SEC, you know, be the kind of the leader in the SEC West, right up there with Alabama. This is a kind of game that's going to tell you a lot about LSU, which is what we've been waiting to sort of have since the Florida State game. The sample size since then has been a really great game at Mississippi State, which of course is on the road, 11 a.m. They were able to get up for that game and play quite well. But that's the Mississippi State team that obviously has plenty of questions too. And then last week you start to think, okay, maybe this is when they show who they really are. And it ended up being inconsistent. And like we talked about on the defensive side in particular. So now this is another scenario where you just start to find out more about this LSU team. Are they going to be someone who can maybe win out the rest of their schedule, as hard as that is to do in this league? Or are they going to be slipping back and be inconsistent throughout the season? We'll start to find that out more. And if they go and they're able to win on the road, especially not just this week against Ole Miss, but then the week after at Missouri, which is the team now, of course, in the top 25, then they are looking like a true contender in the SEC West and a team that can get to at least Atlanta, and then we'll see what happens from there. But if they lose against Ole Miss, while it's not out of the realm of possibility, of course, it is something that is harder to see happening.
Yeah, still road games, as you mentioned, at Missouri, at Alabama. Wilson, great to have you. Thank you so much. Wilson Alexander joining us from The Advocate as we open the program here on a Tuesday afternoon. We'll get to your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And welcome back. Let's get to some phone calls here. We begin in Louisiana. Hello, Dan.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Paul, I think LSU's going to win by 10 points against Ole Miss.
Okay.
And, Paul, I missed Legend talking about Brian Kelly and LSU. The audio or something went off yesterday. Was he having a spell or something?
He didn't mention Kelly yesterday.
He didn't?
No, he talked about Kiffin and Saban and things like that.
Well, I don't know. I thought he was, but anyway, him and Jim, it seems like sometimes we become what we hate. And I think sometimes Legend gets off in that, and Jim most of the time gets off in that.
We didn't even hear from Jim yesterday, Dan, so don't pick on Jim. Kelly is on Long Island. Good afternoon.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Hey, Kelly.
Hey. So, what do you think that Lane Kiffin is like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? He starts out great against Bama, and then he falls apart at the second half. What do you think he needs to do?
I don't know. Maybe he's just really not that great a coach. He's a good coach.
That could be.
I mean, I've been racking my brain, and you come, you know, why is his winning percentage in the 600s? Why has he not won a big game since 2011? Maybe there's an explanation.
Yeah,
maybe he's just slightly better than average, who has a good Twitter game.
Yeah, he does, and he's got a personality, but it's, which is a little bit, you know, abrasive. But it's seems like he has a game plan in the first half of games, and then it falls apart. He gets away from
yeah. It's called
what
not
he
being
really
able to maybe
do.
Complete a mission. You know, you deal with that in pretty
yeah,
much
it's
every
like, it's
field.
It's like a SpaceX not going up. Yeah. And then
yeah,
my
yeah,
other question.
Yeah, you're at a restaurant and they bring you your meal cooked terribly, and you ask the cook, and he goes, "Well, I got distracted."
Yeah,
Lane
I don't know
Kiffin
what happened.
Lane Kiffin gets
yeah.
easily distracted. I know there are other phrases to use, which I won't, because a lot of people
no.
deal with that and take
yeah.
serious medication.
My other question
but Kiffin
is,
has some
yeah.
some attention deficit.
Deficit disorder. He definitely
disorder.
Does.
Yeah, he does.
I think that also. I personally think that Florida State should have stayed at number four. I think that Notre Dame. I think that Ohio State's victory is fine, but Notre Dame is not in their conference, and Florida State beat their rival in the conference. And I don't see why they got dropped. I honestly don't understand it. What do you
yeah,
think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just shows you the devaluation of Clemson, because if you ask me, you know, what are the toughest places? Where are the toughest places to win in the country? Clemson is on that list. Yeah.
It is. It's hard.
It's
to
Notre
win
Dame,
there.
By the way, but Notre. But a lot yeah. of people have won at Notre Dame in recent years, like Marshall.
Yeah, they have, and that's why they're still out of that talk about, you know, a championship, because they're good, but they're not that good. Yeah. And I think Florida State is getting better with each game. Now they're going to have a test.
I think they're scary good. I mean, that was the kind of game
yeah.
you look back on and go, "How did we win it? Who cares? Let's keep playing."
Yeah, exactly. It's the way Bama used to
no,
be.
No, yeah, Bama when always won like that, and they don't anymore.
No, they don't, and that's a little scary. But I think Florida State's other test will be, strangely enough, Miami, because they have gotten better. But I do think they're going to win that game. I have a feeling that now that they beat Clemson, that they're going to win out, and they're going to be a force in the playoffs, I believe. I don't know.
Kelly,
what you
always
think.
Great to hear from you. We're thinking of you, and
yep,
stay in touch. You bet. We go from Long Island okay. to San Antonio.
But I want to talk about those sorry Razorbacks. I'm here on Twitter and on
Instagram.
You don't
crap, like the Razorbacks.
They're going to beat us. Oh, I'm talking about the ones who always lose to us every year in Cowboys. Jerry Jones Stadium, so he'd be crying to my little baby. Man, I'm not afraid of them, Paul. Max Johnson beat him last time. And only one question. Is there any news about Carter Lemon yet? Is he coming back? And I'm not afraid. We're going to be roasting some hogs, Paul. It's going to be a massacre. All we got to do is contain KJ Jefferson and whoop the living crap out of them. Okay, they're pathetic. They're
you won the game last
babies.
Year by a field goal, Matt, at the end.
Yeah, but that's not the same defense it was last year, Paul, was it? I mean, I feel like it's the same defense that played them last year. How they ran the ball up our throat.
Thank you, Matt. David is up next. Good afternoon, David.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for taking my call again. It's an honor to talk to the king of weekday sports talk.
Oh, thank
radio.
You.
Hey, I just wanted to get your thoughts on a couple of things. You know, a lot of folks are acting like that wasn't just a mediocre win for Bama. That was a pretty prolific offense. They've been putting up a lot of numbers, and I think Alabama, you know, really stepped up and played better on defense than they had been playing. And I also think that halftime of that Ole Miss game, we're going to be able to look back and pinpoint that and say that was the point in the season that Jalen Milroe finally got it. He grew up. He looked like a different person in the second half, Paul.
Well, yeah, here's what happened. Coach Saban walked over and said, "Jalen, a reminder, you're up against a Pete Golding defense. Let it rip." Myth is up next in Kentucky. Hello, Myth.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Good afternoon.
Hey, real quick, Paul, I called that Texas game, if you don't remember. I ain't called in and said that Alabama was going to lose any of the other games. But I'm worried about the Bama game against Arkansas and A&M. Miro, he went, I think he's 44 for 66, and I think McKellen's 52 carries for 263 yards this season. I'm just worried they got 2 to 3 receivers, and if you throw in Prentice and Dipley, whatever his other name is, I'm worried that them two games are going to bother them. What's your thought?
Yeah, listen, I get in trouble thinking too far ahead, but I think that's a pretty rough 2-week stretch. I think Arkansas is going to beat somebody this year. I mean, they're going to pull an upset. They are long overdue, and they're good enough. Hey, thank you for the call, Myth. Good to hear from you. Natalie is up next. Good afternoon, Natalie.
Hello. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
The subject I'm calling about, I'm from live in Athens, so we all are following Bennett. We love Bennett, of course. So it occurred to me, he's not playing right now. So it occurred to me, the number of minutes played by any one player, the top 5 players, NFL or collegiate, in the last 2 years in a row, consecutively, what are the minutes logged by, by perhaps Stetson Bennett? And, okay, so SI had his stats listed as, in 2 years consecutive, 29-1, 6,990 yards thrown, threw for 56 touchdowns, ran for 11, and ran for about 500 yards. And I thought, well, I would be tired after that. But so I just thought I had that really a question. Can the number of minutes, and he played more than probably more games than any other player, because other players go in and out with subs, right? So it's just a question about that sort of, you know, accumulation of time and how that can play on and be, play on someone's time. I mean, ability to play again the next year at another level.
Yeah, Natalie, thanks for the call. I've never heard a question quite like that, so I'm tempted not to give a quick. Randy, do you have a thought on that?
No.
No?
Confused.
You're confused? Remember back in grade school, that would say, that makes two of us?
Yeah.
I don't really know what difference it makes how many minutes you play 1 year versus the next.
No.
It's not like you're climbing Mount Everest here. I mean, you're taking breaks. It's an interesting question, though, and I'm going to defer to someone more patient than I am. John is up next in Georgia.
Oh, I got to follow that question, Paul.
You must.
But I got a simpler one for you, Paul. Maybe you can help me out. It is going to be on Deion's faith and the hypocrisy in the media on Deion's faith versus Tim Tebow's. Why is that?
So let's make sure everybody understands. I think I do understand this question. So you're suggesting that people embrace Tim Tebow or not. I'm going to let you explain it before I go
Deion's faith is celebrated by the media and by people like you, Paul.
Right.
But Tebow's isn't. Why is that?
A question here, John. Where specifically is Tim Tebow's faith not celebrated?
Oh, all over the media.
I let me repeat my question. Where is Tim Tebow's faith not celebrated specifically? Can you cite me an example?
No,
it's easier to generalize the media doesn't celebrate Tim Tebow.
Yeah, but they don't. But Deion, you know,
is there
when
some
Tim
reason?
Tebow did
is
it
Tim
was
T,
but it wasn't
hey,
when Deion does it.
Hey, is Tim Tebow in the news right now? Is he relevant to everyday conversation like Deion is?
Sure.
Oh, yes.
Sure. Yeah.
And for what reason is he all over the news?
Why is that, Paul? Why is the hypocrisy, Paul?
I don't understand your question because Tebow is not really Tebow's a television commentator that majority
in the media
of America
too.
Is not speaking about right now.
You don't have an opinion on it?
I don't understand the question. Do you understand the question?
The hypocrisy.
I understand what hypocrisy is. I'm hearing it a lot lately. Sometimes even in phone calls, but I asked you to explain. I understand people celebrating Deion for speaking of his faith. We're capiche on that, right? I don't understand your question about Tim Tebow, though.
But yeah, it's not celebrated when Tebow does it. It's terrible, But when Deion does it, it's wonderful.
John, can I ask you for, I ran through this when I was in school, that you would say something and then the professor would say, can you cite me an example? I'm asking you to cite me one example of the media, anybody criticizing Tim Tebow for his faith.
I'm just waiting on you to explain the hypocrisy.
No, I'm waiting on you to answer my question because you can't answer it. You just offered a generalization to help fit your agenda of what I don't understand. I think it's great that Deion Sanders talks about his faith. I think it's beautiful. I also, as you probably should know, considering Tim Tebow is a friend of mine, I have celebrated his faith in countless conversations over the years. Pretty much any time I ever speak to a group of people,
I
talk about Tim Tebow. I appreciate you interrupting that thought, but go ahead, keep going.
No, I'm just saying I want to hear your opinion. You don't think there's hypocrisy?
Well, I don't see the hypocrisies, so I'm asking you to explain to me what it is.
Well, if you don't see it, then that's the question.
Man, I tell you what, did you ever take philosophy in school? Because when you take philosophy, you have certain syllogism, various tributaries of logic where you have to compute one to the next. You're not computing here because you're so energized and angered by something that I'm not quite understanding, and it has to do with Christianity.
You don't think race has something to do with it?
What's that?
You don't think race has something to do with it?
When I see Deion Sanders talking about faith, I don't see race. Do you?
Obviously, the media.
We'll take a short break. Much more to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back as we continue here Tuesday afternoon. And surprisingly, at least to some people, the University of Missouri has become one of the early big shockers, not even surprise, of the college football season. Heading into Nashville, the Tigers are undefeated, hoping to start 5-0 for only the second time since Mizzou joined the SEC more than 10 years ago. Carrington Harrison is a talk show host in Kansas City and wearing Mizzou proud today. Carrington, thanks for joining us.
Paul, I appreciate you having me on. It's an honor to be here. I want to say shout out to everybody on PowerMizzou.com. And my one objective in this whole conversation, Paul, is to get you to finish M-I-Z. You know the rest. We're going to work on it by the end of this conversation.
Hey, listen, I've said it. I've hit the big drum before games. I mean, I've done it all. But so I'm curious. I know Missouri has been a big topic around some places, but doing a show in Kansas City, has there been any topic for the first couple of days of this week other than Kelsey and the Swifties?
I mean, there's obviously a lot of excitement around Missouri. You have to think just, you know, last week prior to this win over Memphis, they beat K-State. So K-State beat Missouri 40-12 last year. And Paul, let me tell you, it was the least amount of fun I had watching football since the Patriots and Rams Super Bowl. And I vowed I was going to go to the game this year at Columbia, and I was going to see them get their vengeance. And you know what they did? The 61-yard kick from Harrison Meavis. Students storming the field. Paul, you should have been there. I was a little disappointed you weren't in attendance. But, I mean, that has really fueled a lot of this excitement. Missouri fans are obviously excited to take care of business this week against Vanderbilt because everybody takes care of business against Vanderbilt. And everybody's very excited to play LSU at home next week and be 5-0.
Yeah, the only concern I have, and I'll let you answer it because we got some news from Drinkwitz today, or at least an update. But there are some injuries. There were injuries going into the Memphis game with Brady Cook. He looked okay. What do we know right now, and how big of a concern are these injuries?
So we heard from Eli Drinkwitz earlier in the week, and he mentioned the fact that he was surprised, just if you looked at Monday and Tuesday, that Brady Cook played in that game. Luther Burden's a little bit banged up in this game. One of their key defensive linemen, Darius Robinson's also banged up for this game. Those guys are listed as questionable. I would expect all of them to play. You know how football is. It's that gamesmanship when it comes to the injury report. You're questionable. You're doubtful. And eventually those guys go on Saturday. We're talking about the SEC opener for an undefeated season. I expect all three of those guys to play.
Carrington, there are some who look at this and go, yeah, it's impressive, you know, beating K-State. That was really impressive, and it was a bizarre ending. But does this feel real to you? After Vanderbilt, it does get real with LSU and a trip to Kentucky.
I mean, that's a fair question, I would say, when it comes to Missouri, you know, especially when you've been the 6-6 program for the last couple of years. You still have to prove it to people. I think this defense is good. I think they're a little bit better last year. We'll see if they can kind of shore up some of the tackling issues that they've had so far in the season. But I think a lot of the hope for optimism is Brady Cook has looked legitimate. I know there was some questions. A lot of Missouri fans wanted Sam Horn to be the starting quarterback. I think Brady Cook has really taken a hold of that job and really elevated his game in his junior year, and probably the most underappreciated player in college football, Luther Burden, so far this season. He has three straight 100-yard games. He should have had 100 yards in the first game of the season against South Dakota. He had 97. Let's just go ahead and give him those extra 3 yards. I mean, he has been one of the best offensive players, not just in the SEC, but in the country, and not enough people are talking about.
So let's talk about that, and why do you think the message hasn't gotten out about him?
I just think that Missouri just gets underappreciated in the SEC. Like you mentioned it, people are surprised. I mean, look at who they played so far the first game of the season. I mean, they were a 3.5-point underdog at home to Kansas State. Those seem like very two evenly matched teams. I think there is this narrative that, quote, Missouri isn't real SEC. Well, who tell me is real SEC? So I think that's just a lot of it, that, you know, you have those big dogs, those blue bloods, so to speak, at the top, then everybody's kind of fighting for attention in the middle. And when you win games like you did last week against Kansas State, if you can take care of business at home against LSU, they've always struggled against Kentucky. I see the graphic on the screen. Those are two of their next 3 games. I mean, that's how you get respect. You don't get respect by just one win. You got to build it over time and get in key SEC home wins.
Yeah, but Carrington, I hear you loud and clear as somebody who travels the SEC every week. But what has Missouri done overall since coming into the SEC, especially after Gary Pinkel left, to deserve respect?
And that's a fair question. And that's why I say that's something that you have to earn. You got the win against Kansas State. I think Kansas State is a very solid program. Next week, you play one of the big dogs. LSU was looked at as a team that we expected them to be able to compete for the college football playoff. They still got a chance to win the SEC West. So you're right. Missouri hasn't done a lot over the last decade to warrant, you know, people like me coming on this show, you talking about Missouri and being talking about and the cream of the crop of the SEC. You eventually have to prove that on the field. Eli Drinkwitz just got over 500 as a head coach at Missouri, building, doing a great job on the recruiting tool. But eventually, what you do on Monday through Friday has to translate to wins on Saturday. And so far this season, they've won every game that they play.
And let me ask you about doing a show in Kansas City, because it's a pro hotbed. I mean, the Chiefs are the talk of college of pro football this week and have been for a number of years with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. It's also right in the heart of the Big 12 or whatever league it's about to become with all the movement. Just from a college football standpoint in your area of the country, when it comes to Missouri, what is said, and especially the connection to the SEC? Because when I go around the SEC, people wonder about Missouri, if not outright question, like, what's the deal?
It's very split, I would say, in Kansas City. So Lawrence, Kansas is about 45 minutes away. Manhattan, Kansas is about 2 hours away. Missouri, on the opposite side, if you head east, they're about an hour and a half away. So I think there's that fight for kind of relevancy. You know, there's KU basketball fans. K-State has a very passionate fan base. So I do think that the move away from the Big 12 and the old Big 8 has sort of left the fan base a little bit disjointed. And, I mean, also, you mentioned the point, Missouri just hasn't played in a lot of big football games over the last decade. And I would say the biggest home game that they've had probably in the last decade was against Johnny Manziel for that win to win the SEC. He's had a long time ago. I mean, we're at the point in Johnny Manziel's life after doing documentaries on his time in college. So I think wins like the one against K-State, obviously next week against LSU, if Missouri goes into that game undefeated, playing in those kind of games and winning those kind of games, that's what ups your cachet, especially in a city right now where the Chiefs are piping hot. You got you have maybe the most famous person in the world in town. You got to do a lot to kind of get attention around here.
Carrington, speaking of that, Eli Drinkwitz is trying to become better known, and he's glib enough to become famous, depending on, you know, what he says and whether he can get his foot out of his mouth. But the question I have for you is, what are the Missouri fans that you speak to on a daily basis think about him? I know he's undefeated, but he has not been that well received by a lot of people. What's the vibe?
I would say that it's pretty split. I mean, you're always going to have that fan base that are just diehard apologists for the head coach. I've been very split on the head coach. There's no denying his success on the recruiting trail. You go get a player like Luther Burden, who is the number one high school wide receiver. You get Williams Wanneri. He goes to a local high school, Lee Summit North. He's the best defensive line prospect in the country. I mean, he has had some big wins on the recruiting trail. My question with Eli Drinkwitz is he an advantage on Saturdays or a disadvantage on Saturdays? You think back to that game against Kansas State. It was Brandon Staley-like how I thought at times he tried to lose the game for the Missouri Tigers. They just had to overcome it with an historic kick, 61 yards from Harrison Meebus. So I would say the fan base is very split on Eli Drinkwitz, and I've probably been one of the more vocal detractors about Eli Drinkwitz. Is he somebody that gives you an advantage on Saturdays and can help you overcome that margin of error? You know as well as anybody, Paul, the SEC every single week is going to be competitive. The talent, the competition, offensive and defensive lines. You need your coach to be a plus, and I feel like too many times early on in his career, at times he's been a negative.
Carrington Harrison from Kansas City does the local show there. Thank you so much, Carrington. What a pleasure to have you on, and we appreciate it. We had to the break here early on a Tuesday afternoon. Much more to come right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. And Trey is up next in Tuscaloosa. Hey, Trey.
Hey, Paul. The guy that called in about Deion a minute ago, I was going to say something about it, but and then I changed where I'm going. And see if you don't follow me here real quick. Race does have a lot to do with it, mainly because Deion is doing something as a black head coach that has never been done before our very eyes. And he's doing it in a different way, and it's polarizing. And so, of course, he's going to be all over the media and everything. And my suggestion to anybody that doesn't like it would be just don't watch it. I mean, that's simple, just simple today. And I don't know why. I don't care what he does or how he does it. I think he's doing a tremendous job, but he's doing something as a black coach that has never been done in college football, and he's done it quickly, and he's done it his way. And I just think some people don't like that. And my suggestion is just don't watch it. But I was going to tell you, you had something happen on your show yesterday. Two things happened yesterday that I don't think has ever happened before. J.K. did not mention Alabama or Nick Saban, and he finally brought up the word Miami Hurricanes. And that is the first time that has ever happened out of J.K. But my question to you today was going to be, when a team like, let's say, Texas, I think, was 12th and beat number 4 Alabama, when the season goes on, do you still see it as in Alabama? Let's say Alabama ends up 13th. Do you still see it as Texas beat number 4 Alabama, or do you look at it as they beat really number 13 Alabama? Because that gets such to confusing because people say, well, they really wasn't that good. But I feel a team is what they are at and ranked at the time you play them. But thank you for taking my call, and I hang up and listen.
I agree. I think what all that matters is the day you beat them. That's the team that you beat, not the team that they ended up being. Because sometimes when you beat them, they end up disintegrating as a result. Thank you for the call. Mike is in Phoenix. You're on the air. Hello, Mike.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I just had a question. I know we just started a conference play right now, but in the SEC West, based on complete teams, do you have a front runner that you got your eyes on to win the West?
No, because I haven't seen a complete team yet.
All right.
Yeah, I think if you look at LSU, there are plenty of deficiencies. Alabama is self-explanatory. Texas A&M, maybe they're coming out of. I mean, there's 3 to 4 schools that could emerge, but at this point, every one of them has been inconsistent.
Exactly. That's what I'm seeing as well. No real front runner.
Yeah, I think it's difficult to be all in. That's why Saturday night's so important, because LSU would finish off Ole Miss. So if LSU does that, then they now become the team with Alabama. Appreciate the call. And Alex is in Georgia. Good afternoon, Alex. Didn't hear Alex. What about Frank in Alabama? Hello, Frank.
Hey, Paul. How you been doing, Doug?
Frank, we're doing great.
Yeah, well, I'm in the hospital and all that, and I had a bad infection, but I wanted to do a shout out to my nurses here at St. Vincent's Blood. But Paul, do you not think Saturday's Alabama defense was one of the most awesome defenses you've seen this year?
Well, they were really good, and you know they looked well coached by Kevin Steele. In spite of what the other guy said, and I thought they played up to, they didn't play down, they played up, and I think it portends well.
Right, and all these people keep calling in about, you know, talking about Alabama this, Alabama that, like the other caller said about Deion Sanders. Don't watch them if you don't like them. And I want to ask you one other question. Do you think Deion Sanders could be a contender to be Nick Saban's replacement?
Yes, I do.
That would be awesome, would it not?
I would be mostly, I would be very entertained by that. Hey, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Let's check in with Grayson in Tennessee. Hello, Grayson.
Hello.
Hey there.
Hey, do you think the, like, trend for Alabama, is it like an upside or downside?
Grayson, it would probably be, it wouldn't be up. From a recruiting standpoint, it might be up, but the program in the last 2 years has clearly slipped. So that's a bad, that's a
yeah.
negative, that's a negative trend.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I agree. Like, back in, like, 2018, we were dominant all through that decade.
Well, thank you, Grayson. Thanks for your contribution. We are 1 hour in. Does it seem like we've been here longer?
Yes.
I had the same feeling myself. We'll take a break. We have a lot to do, more guests to come, including right around the corner. We hope you'll stick around.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.